All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about the possibility that a Julio Jones extension is imminent, as well as recapping the top half of my most recent mock draft that you can find on falcfans.com.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, I am Aaron Freeman, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. You can find me on Twitter at FalcFans, as well as written content at FalcFans.com, including my most recent first-round mock draft, which we will be touching upon at least the first 14 or 15 picks of which on today's episode, going deeper into sort of my thought process and how the first half of the first round of this year's draft might go, you know, now that we're like, 30 days out from, the first round of the draft. And before we get there, though, we'll devote sort of the second half of this episode. But before we get there, though, I do want to talk a little bit about sort of the recent report that came out on Friday from Mike Freeman of Bleacher Report, where he basically said that Julio Jones' contract extension was potentially on the horizon. I'll give his exact quote in that article that he wrote. My understanding is the Falcons and the Jones are closing in on a deal that would pay him $20 million a year over a 4 or 5 year contract extension. He would get anywhere from $50 million to $60 million in new guarantees, one source told me. Now, it's interesting that Mike Freeman put that out on Friday, because then Chris Mortensen of ESPN went on 680 The Fan that same day, right after that, and basically told John Kincaid and Buck Ballou on their show that the two sides really haven't been exchanging numbers and various offers, and that all reports of, you know, a deal being imminent is 100% false. It's notable that I think on Wednesday this past week, where D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution was talking to Thomas Dimitroff, getting updates on Julio Jones's deal and Grady Jarrett's deal, and basically the idea was that, you know, it seemed to be like, you know, they were only preliminary talks. Things were headed in the right direction, but it wasn't as if things were sort of moving all along. And I think it's interesting because all along this offseason, I've sort of been of the thought process that the Falcons and Julio wouldn't get a deal done until after the draft. But this Freeman report suggests that maybe it's possible that one will happen before the draft, but then you have sort of conflicting reports, more than one, that suggest that, you know, that original timetable that I was believing seems to be more realistic at this point. So we'll have to see, you know, whether Freeman is right. And, you know, but I do want to talk a little bit about this because sort of, you know, I think Freeman could be right in terms of certain things if you look at this Julio situation from a certain perspective. But I want to look at it sort of from how my perspective on how this whole situation has been solved. I talked about this earlier in March in light of how Antonio Brown's contract would affect Julio's extension. And my stance hasn't changed, but I do think there is a way where you could sort of spin sort of what I've thought was likely to happen into sort of fitting what Mike Freeman said, which is he gets a 4 or 5 year extension that averages $20 million a year, and he gets between 50 and $60 million in new guarantees. And I think that's very possible. And the way that that would work is, as I explained before, Antonio Brown in the last 3 years of his current deal with Oakland is getting about $50 million over the next 3 years. That moves to about $4 million, or adds another $4 million to it if he hits certain incentives, which would be in that $50 to $60 million range. I imagine Julio is going to get a similar situation. He has 2 years left on his current contract. He's getting paid about $21 million in cash. I think it's about $26 million against the cap. I could imagine a situation, and I've suggested a situation, where the Falcons could basically just add on a third year to that, so that now instead of being signed through the 2020 season, he's now signed through the 2021 season. And you would add on that third year, and then you would also throw in another $30 or so million to get that $21 million that he's set to earn in cash to $51 million, which would eclipse Antonio Brown. Then you could throw on another couple of $1 million in terms of incentives and whatnot to get him in, you know, $54, $55 million over the next 3 years. And that would fit in the $50 million to $60 million in guarantees, particularly if all of that is guaranteed. One of the things I noted before was Antonio Brown's, his $50 million paid over the next 3 years, only the first 2 years is guaranteed, so he's only getting about like $30 million guaranteed. The Falcons could instead decide, well, we're more committed to Julio Jones than the Raiders are to Antonio Brown for various reasons that I'm sure you guys can suggest why. You know, for one, he doesn't have a blonde mustache. I don't know. But the Falcons could then say, like, we're going to guarantee all of that money. So that $50 million, that $54, $55 million that we're going to pay Julio over the next 3 years, let's guarantee all of it. And so that would fit in with Mike Freeman said. So that's really the core to me, as I said before. That to me is really the core of what this contract negotiation is about. I don't think it's about tearing up Julio's current deal and then giving him a brand new 4 or 5 year contract. Instead, I think what you could see is the Falcons then not only just rework the next 3 years of his contract, but also then tack on some other years at the back end of his contract that could be, let's say, a 4 year extension that tacks on the 2021 year, the 2022, the 2023, and now 2024 to give him a 4 year extension. And that 4 year extension includes $80 million in new money, which again, $30 million of which is going to get paid out over the next 3 years. Then you can just tack on another $50 million on those last 3 years of the contract in 2022, 2023, and 2024 that are just, as I explained previously, are dummy years. They're just there to basically be able to spread out bonus money. They're not really there with the intention that the Falcons are going to, you know, not necessarily, I will say that the Falcons won't keep Julio Jones in those years, but it gives them the flexibility that if they decide to get out of the contract sooner than that, they have the flexibility to do that. Because as I explained previously, that 2022 offseason is going to be an interesting one because Julio Jones is going to be 33 years old. Calvin Ridley is going to be entering the final year of his contract, assuming he gets the 5th year option exercised. And that's typically the time frame where the Falcons typically have extended their first round picks. Now, again, that is based off of how Tim Mitroff and Dan Quinn have done things. Who knows if those guys can still be around in 2022. I think they will be, but you never know. I'm not going to sit here and say that's a lock or anything like that. But and so, like, to me, that gives you the flexibility that if you decide to then pay Calvin Ridley whatever the going rate for a number one receiver is by 2022, then you have the flexibility to potentially move on from Julio Jones if you choose to do so. And I think that's really sort of where the Falcons want to end up in this. Make Julio happy for the next 3 years. Give him as much guaranteed money as he wants, $50, $60 million, if that's the case, so be it. And then lock in Julio Jones for the next 3 years, which I think you want to do. And then not be sort of locked in on Julio Jones after that point, because at that point, you may be trying to transition to more of a Calvin Ridley-centric offense or whatever the case may be. So that, I think, is how this whole situation gets resolved. So I do think Mike Freeman's report isn't that far off the mark in terms of how it could eventually get resolved. So I don't doubt his sort of source being at least in the ballpark of sort of what could happen. But whether or not it gets done in, you know, the near future remains to be seen. So that's what I wanted to say on that. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about sort of my most recent mock drafts that you can find on falcfans.com. But since we're talking mock drafts, there are two draft-related podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network: the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast with host John Ledger and Trevor Sikma, the Draft Dudes Podcast with host Kyle Krabs and Joe Marino. Find them both on the new Himalaya app. Go check that out, guys, where you can create your own podcast playlist, a great new feature on that app. You can also find those two podcasts and other draft-related content on thedraftnetwork.com. Your team every day. So let's talk about my most recent mock draft that you can find out on, you can find more about on falcfans.com. I do recommend reading it in their entirety. I know most of you, and I do this too when I go see a new mock draft, I just kind of skim the first couple of picks and then go straight to who the Falcons have, you know, who the Falcons are going to pick at 14, and then basically read that little blurb and then move on with the rest of my day. So I know most of you are going to do that. We will touch upon the Falcons pick who I had projected, later in this episode. I want to keep some suspense, keep you guys tuned in for the entirety of the show. But I do want to talk a little bit about sort of the top 14, top 15 picks leading up to that Falcons pick and sort of the order in which I pick guys and go a little bit deeper on sort of me, to me, at least the more compelling aspects of this year's draft and sort of what teams may or may not do that at least interest me and may or may not interest you. But I, you know, one of the jokes I had last year in the draft process is whoever the Falcons were planning on taking at the end of the first round was going to be a boring pick. It wasn't going to be sexy. You know, all the sex appeal was at the top of the draft. All the sex appeal last year was with the quarterbacks, the big, you know, four or five quarterbacks that were projected to go in the first round. This year, it's similar. You don't have as many quarterbacks, but I do think because Arizona's situation at that number one pick has been so interesting, sort of Arizona seems to be, in my opinion, playing both sides of the fence, where I think really when you look at sort of Arizona's strategy is they're trying to trade something. Because you look at what they've done on this offseason, for the most part, with the exception of signing Jordan Hicks, a linebacker from Philadelphia, they've signed a bunch of players, but most of them have been basically bargain bin guys or guys signed to short 1 year, maybe 2 year deals. Even Robert Alford, who got a 3 year deal, is really a 1 year deal kind of in the sense of it. You know, it's possible that he could be brought back for a second year if he gets hurt, because it's guaranteed for that second year is guaranteed for injury. But they could get out of that contract after 1 year. And you see that with Terrell Suggs, you see that with a number of other players that Arizona has signed. And you sort of look at it, and the team that was so bad, and the offense that was so bad last year, that they really haven't made any substantial additions to their offense. So for them to be in the situation where they're going to be like, yeah, we're going to draft Kyler Murray, and that's going to be our sort of our fix for the offense. I think all of that is really the Arizona Cardinals are trying to finagle a way to get more picks so that they can really revamp this roster with multiple picks. They have the number one pick in the first, second, third, and fourth round, and they have a bunch of picks in like the sixth and seventh round, but that's not going to move the needle in terms of rebuilding this roster. So I think really what they're trying to do is trying to figure out a way that they can get someone to either trade up to that number one pick and give them a bunch of picks, potentially a team like Oakland, potentially a team like Washington, and give them a bunch of number one picks so that they can then rebuild you know, their roster, or they're trying to get a king's ransom by dangling Josh Rosen out there and potentially getting a team like a Washington or Miami to bite on a Josh Rosen, or maybe even, you know, in some crazy world with the Giants do it, to bite on the Josh Rosen and give up multiple picks so that they can sort of, again, facilitate rebuilding the roster. So if there's sort of that sort of evil genius behind what Arizona is trying to do, then I can get behind it. But all that being said, I had them picking Kyler Murray with their number one pick, although I think there's a good chance that, you know, they will be on the move at this pick. This pick is 100% for sale. I think they're really trying to entice Oakland. They're really trying to entice Washington, the two teams that I think are most likely to be in the market to trade up for that number one spot to get Kyler Murray. I think beyond that, I don't really see anybody else doing it at the top of this draft. So I think that's really what behind Arizona's strategy. So I had Kyler Murray going number one, even though I'm a Josh Rosen fanboy. I feel like they're disrespecting Josh Rosen by playing this. But if there is that strategy behind it where they're just trying to play both sides and be like, someone give us a king's ransom for one of these two quarterbacks, then I think there is some genius behind there. Number two, I had Nick Bosa being the 49ers pick. No-brainer. Josh Allen going to the Jets at number three. Quinnen Williams going to Oakland at number four. I had Devin White, the linebacker, going to Tampa Bay at five. Montez Sweat going sixth to the New York Giants. It's a big jump up from previous. I think my previous mock draft, I had him going somewhere in that 18 to 25 range after a good combine. Seven, Jacksonville gets Juwan Taylor, the offensive tackle from Florida. Eight, Detroit gets Rashawn Gary. You know, I know a lot of people are like, Rashawn Gary is going to be a D tackle in the NFL. I don't really see that. I understand why people think that. I remember watching Rashawn Gary last summer thinking a similar thing, like, oh, this guy's miscast as a defensive end. They should kick him inside the D-tackle. He never really played D-tackle at Michigan. And when he did get opportunities to rush inside, he didn't really do anything that made you feel special. To me, Rashawn Gary's kind of like a bigger version of Vic Beasley, if I can say, in the sense of, like, he doesn't really do anything particularly well. He's not really developed or polished as a pass rusher, but he's just a big physical specimen. And like, to me, he's a very explosive athlete. So I honestly kind of see him similarly to Vic Beasley, which is, I think he's going to probably wind up being like a 3-4 outside linebacker, as opposed to this defensive end or defensive tackle that other people seem to be projecting him as. because I just think, you know, the technical refinement of the position, I'm not convinced he's going to get there. Maybe he does. Again, he goes to a good coaching staff that can develop that. We saw that with Danielle Hunter in Minnesota. So I'm not going to sit here and say it's impossible that some team will turn him into the player that I think a lot of people projected him. But to me, it's just kind of like, well, he doesn't really have a position, so he has the body type of D-tackle, so let's make him a D-tackle. We'll see how it goes. Number 9, I had Brian Burns going to Buffalo. 10, I had Ed Oliver going to Denver. Yeah, I've said it before, I don't think Ed Oliver's going to fall as far as people have been often projecting him to fall. Number 11, I had Cincinnati taking Dwayne Haskins. As I mentioned in the blurb on FalcFans.com, I feel like Cincinnati is going to be turning the page. You know, not only in the coaching staff, but moving on from Marvin Lewis, I think they're going to start to turn the page with a quarterback with Andy Dalton. So a guy like Haskins is there at this pick, which it seems like the Giants don't love Haskins. It seems like the Jaguars are going to pass on a quarterback after getting Nick Foles. So it does seem like Cincinnati's in a unique position to have somebody who some people think is the best quarterback in this draft, and Dwayne Haskins, fall to them at pick 11. So that's going to be an interesting thing to watch. Green Bay, I had taken DK Metcalf at pick 12. This Metcalf pick, I have no idea who's going to take Metcalf, because you don't really see a lot of teams at the top of this draft that have a desperate need for wide receiver other than maybe Buffalo, maybe Jacksonville. But it doesn't seem like, even though I think Metcalf is probably one of the four most talented prospects in this draft, after guys like Bosa and Quinnen Williams and Ed Oliver, you know, I feel like he's going to get underdrafted, or at least, you know, he's probably going to go somewhere in the 7 to 12 range. So I had him going to Green Bay just simply because I couldn't really keep pushing him down the board. 13, I had Jonah Williams, the offensive tackle from Alabama. And then, of course, pick 14, I had the Falcons taking Cody Ford. And we'll talk a little bit more about why I had the Falcons taking Cody Ford in just a moment. But you guys can find all your Locked On podcasts on the brand new podcasting app, Himalaya. Remember, in an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and new features every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to whatever Locked On podcast you prefer, your team, every day. So I had the Falcons taking Cody Ford, the offensive tackle from Alabama, in my most recent mock draft on FalcFans.com. And, you know, I've said before on the podcast, I think there are 8 players at the Falcons I feel like are realistic, strong, likely options for the Falcons at pick 14, should they decide to stay put at that pick, which I think they're justified in doing. I think they're also justified in trying to trade up to get somebody better. But those 8 players include Brian Burns, Jonah Williams, who I had off the board at this point in this mock draft, Cody Ford, Devin Bush, who I had going pick 15 to Washington, although I think Washington, again, is probably going to trade up for a quarterback, try to trade up for a guy, but we'll see how that goes. Then I also had Christian Wilkins, who I had going pick 18 to Minnesota, Garrett Bradbury, pick 19 to Tennessee in my most recent mock draft, Cleveland Farrell, the defensive end from Clemson. I had him going pick 24 to Oakland. And then Dalton Risner, the offensive lineman from Kansas State, who I had going pick 28 to the Chargers. So, you know, based off of this mock draft, basically Burns and Williams were the only guys out of those 8 guys off the board. If you were sort of, you know, pushing me to the edge of a cliff and saying, okay, put those 8 guys in the order from most likely pick to least likely pick. If you were forcing me to pick it again a month ahead of the draft, just basically throwing darts at the board, I would guess, again, purely speculation, this is not inside analysis, this is just sort of looking at the Falcons draft trends over the years and sort of also incorporating my own opinions on various players. But I would guess Burns would be at the top of that list. Ford would probably be number 2. Then I'd probably say Wilkins 3, Jonah Williams 4, let's say Devin Bush 5, Cleveland Farrell 6, Bradbury 7, and Risner 8, I guess, is probably how I would order it. Again, that ranking will probably change a week from now or whatever the case may be. So I think Ford is going to be pretty high on their list. I think Burns is going to be pretty high on their list. And I feel at this point in time, obviously, reasonably confident that one of those two guys is going to be available. I feel really confident that Christian Wilkins is probably going to be available at that 14th overall pick as well. So, again, I feel like sitting here, Jonah Williams as well, or I didn't have him there, but I think he'll go around that range. So I feel like the Falcons can be reasonably confident that he could be there. So, again, it goes back to what I've said before, which is I think if you're the Falcons, even though you may not get a quote-unquote great player like an Ed Oliver potentially at that pick, I do feel like you should be confident that you should be getting a good player. You should be able to get one of those four guys, in my opinion, that's going to be a good player. I think Devin Bush is a really good player. I think Garrett Bradbury is going to be a really good player. I'm not as high on Reisner. I'm not as high on Farrell as the rest of that group, but I do feel like they check some boxes that the Falcons particularly will look at, and so that's why I include them in that group. I don't necessarily see the Falcons being as high on a guy like a Montez Sweat. I don't see them being as high on a guy like a Rashawn Gary. So I don't really see those guys in the mix there. I'm trying to think who else. I think Andre Dillard is a great player that would be a great fit, but because of his experience playing only exclusively left tackle, I don't see the Falcons being as high on him as they possibly are. By the way, I had Dillard going 16 to Carolina in this recent mock draft on Falcons.com. So I think there are options for the Falcons if they wait to 14. You know, who knows if my 8-man list is accurate or anything like that. And again, but you know, going to Cody Ford, you know, one of the reasons why I picked Cody Ford over somebody else, well, on my previous mock draft that I did in mid-February, I had them picking Christian Wilkins. I like switching things up on my mock drafts. You know, one of the things is someone who collects mock drafts and posted them on the database on FileFans.com and have done that for many years over at FileFans.com. I come across a lot of websites that update their mock drafts like every week, every 4 to 6 days or something, but they don't really change their mock drafts all that much. They change a couple of picks here or there, and over the course of a month, you know, with weekly updates, you'll get at the end of the month, you'll hit a vastly different mock draft than what you had at the beginning of the month, but incrementally, you don't see those sort of changes. So I wanted to switch up my picks. I wound up changing 28 out of 32 picks from my previous mock draft, you know, 5-6 weeks ago. So I wanted to definitely do that with the Falcons as well. You see that with Matthew Tabeek at AtlantaFalcons.com. He's done a couple of mock drafts this offseason, and he's had a new different player for the Falcons pick. I think each time he's done it, he's done like 3 or 4 of them. And so I think that's a good strategy to have. You want, like, the whole point of mock drafts isn't, you know, to a certain extent, isn't necessarily to accurately predict the draft, although that's what you're trying to do, but it's also the sort of like, let's go through all these permutations, let's go through all the different variables, and just basically locking in on one guy or two guys, as so many mock drafts have done, which is basically it's either Ed Oliver or Christian Wilkins. Earlier this offseason, before his injury, it was Jeffrey Simmons, and basically the vast majority of mock drafts, probably like 70% of them, have had the Falcons picking one of those three guys this offseason that I've seen. And it's just kind of boring. And so part of the reason why the appeal of Cody Ford is, for me, at least currently, is like, oh, this is something new and different from what you're seeing. You've only seen a handful of mock drafts that have the Falcons taking Cody Ford for whatever reason. I think Cody Ford fits, you know, the Falcons, quote unquote, beefed up their offensive line with the additions of Jamon Brown and James Carpenter, getting Carpenter's 320, Brown's 340. You know, Cody Ford is like 330 or something like that. You know, it's all with the idea of being, quote unquote, hashtag physical, you know, being this big physical offensive line, you know, so Dan Quinn can go up to the media and say, yeah, we got real tough, we got real physical. And, you know, as has been the case in light of the Brown and Carpenter signings, the Falcons media and the fan base is going to eat that stuff up. Now, again, I don't know how much more physical Brown and Carpenter really are from what Schweitzer and Fusco are. You know, they might be more physical, but I don't think by this huge difference that, you know, maybe various narratives are portraying it as. But, like, I think Cody Ford is a very physical player. I think he's legit. I think he's athletic. I think he's a big, wide body. I know a lot of people talk about him as a guard. I don't see him as a guard in this scheme, in a man-blocking scheme. that doesn't play that much zone, doesn't play the outside zone stuff, I think he would be a great guard. I think in this scheme, he would be a terrible guard, frankly. I think, you know, you have to have sort of movement skills. That's part of the reason why I'm not as high on Carpenter and Brown as maybe some other people are, because I think in order to be an effective guard in this scheme, you have to be able to nail those second-level blocks. And when the Falcons have had guards that can do that, their run game clicks, right? We saw that with Chris Chester. We saw that last year with Ben Garland. I know, you know, this is a hot take to a lot of people out there, but if you watch film, I don't think it's a hot take at all. You know, Ben Garland was the best guard on the team last year. He's no longer with the team. And the reason why he was the best guard on the team last year is because, unlike Brandon Fosco, unlike Wes Schweitzer, Ben Garland can hit those second-level blocks. And so, you know, to me, Cody Ford's a tackle in this scheme because while he's athletic enough to climb to the second level, similar to Brown, similar to Carpenter, he's not really great at doing those things. And so, you know, for me at least, I think the idea of Cody Ford, the idea of Jamon Brown manning the right side of that offensive line, being this big wall of human flesh on that side of the line of scrimmage, I think makes a lot of sense if you're the Falcons. It's something that you can sell. Again, not to sound overly cynical, but it is something that you can be like, yeah, we're going to be this big physical team and blah, blah, blah. You know, again, whether it manifests in terms of the team, you know, being this road grading offensive line, we'll have to sort of see. I think they certainly should make strides there. Don't get me wrong. But I don't know if necessarily in this scheme, those two guys are going to be these dominant run blockers like they would be maybe in a different scheme and whatnot. So that's going to be the interesting question I'm going to have. Should the Falcons draft Cody Ford? But I think because of his size, because of his power, because of his physicality, because of his athleticism, he's just a big dude to get around. And he's very effective in pass protection because it's so hard to get around him. And so I like him more so than some of these other offensive tackle prospects that the Falcons could have that could immediately come in and push a guy like Ty Sambrelo for the starting job. And yeah, I think if the Falcons did draft Cody Ford, he's going to be the Falcons starter, right tackle in week one. I think that. I think Jonah Williams would be. I think Cody Ford would be. Outside of those two, I don't know if there's anybody else. You know, I guess if Andre Dillard was the pick, I think Dillard would probably start too. But I think outside of those guys, like Greg Little, Reisner, I don't know if those guys are going to start over Ty Sambrelo week one. The Ford pick's going to be interesting if they do, because as we've suggested, as I've talked about previously on the podcast, there's compelling evidence that the Falcons are looking at some of these day two offensive tackles, the Yadni Kajusts of the world, the Caleb McGarrys of the world, the Titus Howards of the world, et cetera, and looking at these guys and being like, if we go in another direction in round one, if we go for a defensive lineman, a pass rusher like a Brian Burns, Christian Wilkins, we can still get a good offensive tackle on day two of the draft. And I think that is one strategy that is, if not outright probable, definitely a strong possibility sitting here today. So, you know, the Falcons draft plans, if you ask me, and many of you all constantly ask me these questions, what do you think the Falcons are going to do? I don't know. It could be this, it could be this, it could be this. Sitting here today, even though I had him picking Cody Ford in this mock draft, I don't feel like this is the likeliest outcome. No, it's just like this is one of four different outcomes. This is one of 16 different outcomes that we could see with the Falcons, or eight different outcomes, I should more accurately say, that we could see the Falcons pulling the trigger on in round one. So that's, you know, that's where I think people should interpret mock drafts, particularly this far out of the draft. You know, the week of the draft, then we can sort of really be like, no, this is how the draft is actually going to go, because now we've heard things. Again, this time last year, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen were the prohibitive favorites to be the number one pick. No one was talking about Baker Mayfield being the number one pick. No one was talking about Baker Mayfield being the number one pick until the week before the draft, when the Browns organization leaked it after John Dorsey basically told the Browns, oh, we're taking Baker Mayfield. And then the Hugh Jackson wing of the organization leaked it to the media. And that was sort of how John Dorsey and the rest of the organization realized that, you know, maybe Hugh Jackson got a little Sean Lee in him. He's a little bit of a snake. I don't know. oh, God. Okay. That's a joke that's only funny to me. I apologize. So there you have it, guys. There's my sort of mock draft, in-depth look at the mock draft. Go check it out on FileFans.com. And we'll have some more content on that website in the coming days and weeks leading up to the draft. And we'll guys got you covered on the Locked On Falcons podcast in the days and weeks. We got a lot of draft content coming your way over the next 30 days. So stay tuned to that. And if you want to provide your feedback to me in this podcast, you can do so on Twitter at Locked On Falcons. You can do so on Facebook at Locked On Falcons. You can do so via email address, lockedonfalcons@mail.com. And, of course, you can leave a comment at falfans.com where the podcast is posted. Until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.